ENT. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, that was Flashpoints. Up next is Stage and Screen, right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Red Umbrella film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film My Own Private Idaho will be shown Sunday, August 30th at 7 p.m. Directed by Gus Van Sant, My Own Private Idaho adapts Shakespeare's Henry IV story to friends and hustlers living on the streets of Portland. Again, that's My Own Private Idaho at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 11 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
I'm Demi Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to Music from the Slants, a Portland band led by Simon Tam. Find out more about their music at theslants.com. This song is called Welcome to Doomtown, and it's from their Revolution album. I like it. I want it to be my theme music. Today I get to talk with a talented playwright who does something that can be pretty tricky to do. He takes cultural characters dealing with important issues in their lives and makes delightful and insightful comedies from that. Today I feature Prince Gomovilas, Thai American playwright living in Los Angeles. He's going to join us shortly via phone. So stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Demi Roberts. With me on the phone right now is playwright Prince Gomovilas. Hello, are you there? Prince?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Welcome great. To Stage and Studio. So great to have you. Now, did I pronounce your name correctly?
That is as correct as anybody will ever get.
Oh, come on. Tell me your name.
I say Gomovilas, but yeah. If you want to go super Thai, then it's kind of like...
Oh, wow. Okay. Gomovilas. It is. So on your TEDx talk in 2013, which you have at your site, princegomovilas.com, you started off telling people that you were the only Thai American playwright in the country. And you also mentioned that if people knew any others, not to tell you. But has that changed since then? Are you still the only Thai American playwright that you know of?
I think one friend of mine, one time, some months after that, TEDx talk was posted, told me that she knew of a Thai student somewhere in some college who was writing plays.
An up-and-comer. You're the first, though. We'll keep it that way for now. So what brought you into the world of playwriting?
It was kind of an accident. I'd always been interested in writing. I was writing little comic books and short stories since I was a kid, so I remember... You know, in fifth grade, I would write comic books about cats chasing dogs and dogs chasing cats and drawing the little pictures and the bubbles and all that stuff. And that evolved eventually into short story writing in middle school and then in high school. And then when I got to college, I went to San Francisco State University and I majored in film. And I was really interested in film at the time and was interested in writing for film. And, you know, at the time, there weren't a lot of screenwriting classes that were being offered at San Francisco State. This was some years ago. So in order to supplement my degree, I had to take playwriting classes. So these were the classes that were the closest that I could get to screenwriting. And I really fell in love with the form. I didn't know too much about plays at that point. I had barely even gone to the school plays, you know, during high school and middle school that you all remember and see. So it was a new form, but it turned out that I was really better at playwriting than I was at the screenwriting work that I was doing. So I really fell in love with theater And I eventually earned my MFA specifically in playwriting, also at San Francisco State University. So I did a little switcheroo.
And that's a good place to do it, too, to do playwriting there. And, you know, family kind of figures in a lot with your, some of your writing, at least what I'm familiar with. And I just want to mention also that I follow your blog, Bamboo Nation, and you have this great post about taking your mom to see Magic Mike XXL.
Yeah.
I it was very squirm-worthy for you, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, imagine taking your mother to go see Magic Mike.
Oh, actually, I think I'd have a great time. So I think it's different for a guy.
It is.
Well, how important is family to your plays?
It's very important. You know, they always say write what you know.
Right.
And I think most of my earlier plays were focused on different types of family. And as the plays progressed, they have moved away from well, I mean, they haven't necessarily, they still deal with biological family, but I'm also interested in the families that we make as well.
Well, did your family support your work? Because, you know, it is unusual, I would imagine, for a Thai American family to have a playwright in the family.
Yeah, support came later, I think. You know, almost all Asian American parents want their kids to become doctors or lawyers or engineers. I don't even know what an engineer does. But,
no.
but
you're
I
a word engineer. How's that? You're a word engineer. Well, I think it always makes a difference when you start making money and it's like, oh, okay, you know, oh, maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I think when they started to see themselves depicted in certain ways on stage, then they were like, oh, I guess this is real, and started to treat my career a little bit more seriously.
Well, right now you've got a lot of things happening in your career, several plays opening around the country, and one just closed last week from London, England. I don't suppose you went there to see it, did you?
I did not. It's a play called Mysterious Skin, which is an adaptation of a novel written by Scott Heim, a novel that was later adapted into a film by Greg Araki. But I always like to say that my play predated the film. But yeah, that's been in the UK quite a bit, in London and Manchester, Scotland, Ireland. But I have not yet managed to make it out there to see any of those productions. But hopefully one of these days.
Well, you've got a lot of things happening. You've got one in Texas. You've got a series of plays in Texas and San Francisco, which is a kid's play, essentially, right? Oscar, a series of plays about this kid named Oscar?
Yeah, aside from the plays that I write for adults, I have spent the last, I would say, 10 years or so writing plays for youth that tour schools. So I have a series of plays that I call the Oscar plays, and there are four in this series right now. They tour elementary schools, so they're meant for kindergarten through fifth grade, and they've been touring pretty continuously since 2005.
Wow.
In the San Francisco Bay Area. They've now expanded out to Houston and soon Philadelphia, and I hope other places soon. And they tackle, you know, issues that kids deal with. So, you know, there's one play called Oscar and the Big Bully Battle, which is a play about, of course, bullying.
Yes.
Yeah. And
important.
The last one that I just developed in Houston with the Alley Theater was called Oscar and the Curiously Colorful Clash, and I wrote that with a co-writer named Matt Ackles, and that is a play about diversity. And then I was just commissioned to write a new one for Theater Works up in San Francisco called
Wonderful.
Oscar and the Countless Costume Changes, which is about gender identity.
Wonderful.
Real hot button topic nowadays.
Exactly. Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts talking with Thai American playwright Prince Gomovilas about his unique blend of multicultural comedy. And you can find out more about him at princegomovilas.com. That's GOMOVILAS. And also stageandstudio.org. Now, also what's happening, and I just want to do full disclosure, this is something that I'm involved in here in Portland, but there's a play called The Theory of Everything, and it's not the one about Stephen Hawking. I just want a full alert here to everybody, because you had that before that, right?
Yes, yeah. This play predates that also.
Predates that also. It's a cool title.
I'm ahead of my time.
Maybe they inspired, you know, the title, you know, was inspired the movie. So that's happening on Sunday, August 23rd at 2 p.m. at Portland Center Stage, and August 2 p.m., August 29th. 9th at Artist Repertory Theater, and it's being produced by Theater Diaspora, and you can find out more about that at theaterdiaspora.org. And the theory of everything, now we were talking a little bit about family, it's a group of Pan-Asian family members and friends, an extended family, if you will, who meet one night in a Las Vegas wedding chapel. And what are they waiting for, Prince?
They are waiting to see UFOs.
Yeah. Well, that really struck me when I read about that. So what brought, you know, how did you come up with this?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in the supernatural.
Yeah.
And sort of fantasy. So a lot of the short stories that I wrote when I was younger, they were very kind of Stephen King-ish or Twilight Zone-ish. But you know, as I kind of moved on into playwriting, my concerns around certain social issues and spiritual issues and all that type of stuff became more prominent. Those are the types of things that I wanted to write about. But I'm writing about them through this lens of, I think, the supernatural. So you know, my first play kind of dealt with spontaneous combustion. I had a play about invisibility. I had a play about superheroes. I had one about ghosts. And this one deals with UFOs and the idea of alien abduction, but through a comedy, of course.
Of course, of course. And it is very funny. Did you originally imagine it with a Pan-Asian cast?
I did. You know, I think this is one of the first plays. So this was first produced in 2000, so it was about, you know, 15 years ago. I think it was one of the first plays, if not the first, truly Pan-Asian play. You know, I think a lot of Asian American plays before that time were focused typically on one specific type of quote-unquote Asian, right?
Right, no, so one like, ethnicity.
Right, so there was the Japanese play or the Chinese play or the Korean-American play. So this is a play that features a variety of different types of Asians from different backgrounds. So we have Thai Americans, Japanese-Americans, Chinese-Americans, Filipino-Americans. So I really kind of wanted to depict a sort of broader view of what Asian America was within one play.
And it's a view of Asian America that is actually quite current, and that's what attracted me to it. I the term Pan-Asian, too, it brings out conversations among, even within the Asian community, about what, you know, what it, who looks, especially when you're casting, like, who looks more Chinese or who looks more Japanese.
Right,
and I'm kind of amused by these discussions because I feel like there's been so much blending, you know,
sure.
That is there a look, you know, is there any kind of, you know, distinctive ethnic look to this? And it's really interesting to explore that.
I think Asians think so. I like to think that I have a pretty good eye.
Well, what was the most fun for you in writing this play?
You know, I think it was getting to know all of these characters and taking various aspects of people that I know or have known in my own life and just kind of inserting them into the play and trying to weave it all together into this one coherent piece, because I'm trying to juggle seven characters that I really want everybody to fall in love with, you know.
Well, how did you come up with these characters? Because you have one that's a TSA agent, of course, a couple that owns the wedding chapel that are Japanese and, I believe, Filipina. And, you know, how did you come up with these different types of characters?
Well, I think I started with what did I want each character to sort of represent,
mm-hmm.
You know, so we have, you know, several generations of Asian Americans here in the play. So I wanted to make sure that I had Asian Americans who were born here, but are still struggling with discrimination. So those are the younger Chinese American characters. I have characters who immigrated very early in their lives. I have characters who immigrated later in their lives. So not only, you know, do I try to present different Asian ethnicities in order to illustrate sort of the variety of different types of Asians that exist in the world, but especially in the United States. But I wanted to depict how even across generations, and depending on when you got here to the United States, or if you were born here, what a huge difference that was in terms of your quality of life and what you experienced,
and
then to also explore where the common ground was.
And meanwhile, they're all together at a UFO watching party. So, you know, who wouldn't want to do that, right?
That's right.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts talking with Thai American playwright Prince Gomovilas about his unique blend of multicultural comedy and more at princegomovilas.com. His play, The Theory of Everything, will be Sunday, August 23rd at 2 p.m. at Portland Center Stage and August 29th at 2 p.m. at Artist Repertory Theater. And you can find out more about that at theaterdiaspora.org. And I also have those links at stageandstudio.org. Some of the characters in The Theory of Everything have futures that are sort of hinted at beyond the ending of the play. Do you expect any of them to reappear, any of these characters, or have they reappeared in other works that you've done?
They have not reappeared. I think The Theory of Everything is complete unto itself, so I really would like the audience to just imagine where these people have ended up.
Well, you know, your play Mysterious Skin, which you just talked about, that was in London last week, it's about an 18-year-old young man who gets paid as a sex worker, and the other is a young woman who is an alien abductee. And so this seems like a more serious play, but there is still an alien theme to that. Is that representative of looking at from a multicultural perspective, that feeling of isolation or looking for something beyond the stars?
Well, I think you know, the UFO element serves different purposes in these two very different plays. So in Mysterious Skin, one of the primary characters, his name is Brian. He's an 18-year-old boy who thought that maybe he was abducted by aliens when he was 8 years old, because he has vague memories of a traumatic experience that seemed to fit the description of what an UFO alien abduction is supposed to be like. The truth is far more disturbing, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but he comes to find out that he was sexually abused as a child. So he actually used this UFO thing to create false memories in order
to
protect himself.
Yeah.
And I think the big question at the end of the play is whether or not it's better for him to know what the truth was, or whether it's better for him not to know what the truth was. So that's how the UFO and alien stuff functions in Mysterious Skin. In The Theory of Everything, I think it's a little bit different, because I think it is a plot device, but I think it's primarily a metaphorical device. It's just this idea, the idea of UFOs, right? And this search for UFOs is, especially for people who've never seen one, it's this metaphor for the characters' desire for something bigger than themselves and bigger than their own what they see as very small lives in Las Vegas. So that's how that functions in The Theory of Everything.
Well, let's talk about your future work. Do you have other projects that are coming up that you're working on that you can talk about?
Yeah, sure. I have a play called The Brothers Paranormal, which is about two Thai-American ghost hunters who try to capitalize on the nationwide increase in Asian-looking ghosts.
I have to say, I love your sci-fi supernatural bent. I really do. I really connect to that.
Great.
And so is that going to be produced anywhere that we can see, or is it out soon?
Not quite yet. It's circulating, so I'm waiting for somebody to pick up
production. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been kind of on the development circuit, so it's had some readings here and there around town.
Well, you do seem to be getting produced, which is great for any playwright. How feasible is it for an Asian American playwright in this time period, since, you know, the time that you began, like, say, you know, maybe 15 years ago? Is it better, worse, you know, even a decade ago?
I think it's way better.
Really?
I think it is way better. Yeah, because I think public consciousness around issues of multiculturalism and diversity, and just consciousness of different races and issues like that, it's so much more prominent now in the public consciousness, and especially prominent in the theater world. There are still some struggles, and if you know anything about Asian American theater, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I think all this time later, I feel like it's easier for somebody just cracking out right now.
Well, it's an easier way to get known and have your work distributed too, as far as technology itself.
Sure, I would think.
You know, just the mechanics of it.
Oh yeah, I remember back in the day when I was still kind of printing out scripts at Kinko's and
exactly.
putting them in envelopes and spending lots of money doing that. Now I just, you know, send it out via email, and that's great.
Does it seem like there's more opportunities for Asian American playwrights now?
Specifically Asian American playwrights? I think so, yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of Asian American theaters and multicultural theaters that are doing okay, you know. And I see a lot of these development programs and festivals also paying attention to Asian American writing. But maybe that's just because there's more of it, you know. I think maybe also that there's been an increase in Asian Americans who are interested in the arts in a way that you know, that wasn't as huge before.
Well, you're going to have a Skype talk after the performance on August 23rd at 2 p.m. You're gonna join everybody via Skype, and so people will actually get to see you and talk to you and ask you questions. Do you have any words of wisdom to the cast that's performing your play for The Theory of Everything right now?
Any words of wisdom? Wow. Don't screw it up. No.
that'll put everybody at ease, I'm sure.
Just say the words on the page.
Yeah.
Be real, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's delightful, and it's great to talk with you. In the last minute or so, do you have any drive to get back into film? Or you've done some film work since then, but is your passion mostly in playwriting, or do you see yourself turning to other sources, to other media?
Yeah, I mean, my passion definitely is playwriting. I am dabbling with some screenplays, so I'm working on some stuff right now. It's a totally different form, and it's a challenge in a different way. So, you know, sometimes I have to turn on a different side of my brain in order to work on that stuff. But yeah, definitely, I'm interested in all media.
In all media. Well, you know, I did get a chance, and it's up online too. If people want to see it, there's a film called, it's a short film called Lunchbox. Is that it?
It's called Lunchtime.
Lunchtime, and it's by Keel Walford, a wonderful Hawaiian American director, and you wrote the screenplay, and I thought it was wonderful. It was
Thank
a very
so much.
Simple, beautiful story about a boy and his teacher, you know, a boy who's, I believe, was being bullied, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a beautiful film, and I hope people can see it. You can catch it on YouTube. It's at it's called Lunchtime. So, Prince Gomovilas, thank you so much for joining me today. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And hopefully get to talk to you soon. So you
okay.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. And if you want to see The Theory of Everything featuring music from The Slants, it will be this Sunday, August 23rd at 2 p.m. at Portland Center Stage, and August 29th at 2 p.m. at Artist Repertory Theater. And you can find out more about that at theaterdiaspora.org. You can also see Prince Gomovila. I said it wrong. You can also see Prince Gomovilas on a Skype call after the 2 p.m. show on Sunday, August 23rd, for a special talk back with the playwright himself. I also have links to all of that at stageandstudio.org. And KBOO listeners can use the discount code THEORY for half price. And I'm not going to tell you the amount, but yeah, the discount code Theory. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. Next up, I want to tell you a story about Portland theater artist Kate Mura. I heard over the weekend that moved me so much that I had to talk to her. I'd like you to hear the story directly from Kate, though. Kate Mura, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me, Dee Mae.
Hey, great to talk with you. Now, you have been traveling for quite a while doing a show called Suburban Tribes, and you were overseas. You were in France, and you were at a festival, the Avignon France Festival there. I'm sure I don't have the name correctly, but that was the place. And when you got to Paris, something happened to you. Would you tell us what happened?
Sure. You are correct on the place. I had been invited to perform Suburban Tribe in the Avignon Off Festival, which happens every year in July. And I was traveling back after 15 straight days of performances. And my train arrived in Charles de Gaulle around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And my flight the next morning was so early that I had to be at the airport at 5 a.m. And so Rusty Tennant, the artistic director of Fuse Theater Ensemble, and I were traveling together, and we made the decision that instead of getting a cab and schlepping all of our bags around Paris for a couple hours, that it was a smarter idea for us to get a hotel room and grab a couple hours sleep before our flight. And so we went over to the Ibis Hotel in Terminal 3 of Charles de Gaulle and got checked in, got our room key, went over to the elevator to go up, and it had those security features where you need to put your room key in and then it will let you go up to your floor. Ours wasn't working to go up to our floor. And so we went back down to another gentleman had joined us in the elevator, and so it took him to his floor, which was not ours. So we went back down to the lobby, brought all of our bags, because we were traveling with our personal luggage, the show luggage,
the masks and everything too.
You know, we were laden down, and Rusty stayed with the bags while I ran up to the front office to get a new room key so that it would work. And there was no line, so I literally pretty much had a straight line from the elevator to the front desk. The different woman who helped me the second time handed me two keys, room keys back, and said, you were at the wrong elevators. And apparently there was another bank of elevators way down a long hallway that I didn't...
We're going to have to come to the long and short of it here. So,
all right. And so basically, when I got back, when in the 30 seconds to a minute that it took to get the new room keys, I came back and my bag was gone, even though Rusty had been with all of our luggage the whole time, three men in suits.
Wow.
That after a whole rigmarole with the cops and filing police reports in Paris and dealing with the translation.
But it was an important bag, I have to say, because it had your masks in it, your costumes, everything that you really needed to do this show, Suburban Tribes, which has been with you for several years now in development and in performance. And now, you know, you're faced with what to do with this for this show. And there's probably no chance of getting any of that back, is there?
Probably not. We circulated pictures through social media
of
the mask that was stolen and the case that was stolen in the hopes that some of our friends in France might see them at flea markets or out of the corner of their eye in a dumpster, but the likelihood of us getting them back is almost nil.
Well, so this is how the theater community can pull together. You're currently in Dear Galileo right now. Claire Willett's play at Coho Theater and Playwrights West is the producing organization, and they're giving you the space at Coho Theater for a fundraiser Monday, August 24th at 7:30 p.m. at Coho Theater. So I just wanted to alert people to that they could go Monday, August 24th at 7:30 at Coho and see your show, and you'll be performing it.
I will.
Yes. And so that's one way, hopefully, to get those masks back. But I think for most people, you know, it's hard to understand how important those masks are. You know, so I really felt for you when I read that had happened to you. And I'm so sorry, but I wanted to get the word out on that. So if you want to see Suburban Tribes and also support Kate Mira after the theft of her theater materials, you can attend Suburban Tribes Monday, August 24th at 7:30 at Coho Theater. That's located at 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street in Portland. And can people email you a contact email or anything else for reservations? Okay. And what is that?
Kate, KATE, at FuseTDX, FuseTDX.com.
All right. And I'll have that.
Box office tickets website.
I'll have that at stageandstudio.org too. Kate Mira, thank you so much. And I hope it goes well for you, and have a great weekend of shows.
Thank you so much, Dima. I appreciate it.
You take care. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Kristen Yont. And I have photos and links as well as guest info at stageandstudio.org. I also have a podcast of the show later today. Like us on facebook.com/stage_n_studio or tweet me at @StageTheLetterNNStudio. Till next time, I'm Dima Roberts. We're going to go out with more music from The Slants. This is from their new album, Yellow. Visit their site at slants.com.
Today.